This is Mae Brussel, the second half of broadcast number 732, and I'm going to run down it more quickly now in the second half some of the items that are in the news at the present time. I'm very suspicious of the airplane crash that went down. Once you study tragedies that will eventually have no solution, that they throw it around, they can't come up with answers, you get to hear the voice or the tone or the way the news is handled from the moment the accident or the murder takes place. And if you sharpen your senses, you can pick up some of those discrepancies or avoidances of details that will later build into big stories or investigations, such as the Korean Airlines story or some of those that aren't so huge, but you pick up a certain tone. And as soon as that airplane went down with the peacekeeping force from the Middle East, the first thing the newsman said was, there was absolutely no conspiracy or no sabotage, even though the newspaper this morning, December the 16th, is saying that they are looking into all causes, including sabotage, everywhere from sabotage to a bird in flight, that sabotage isn't ruled out. I heard one of the spokesmen from the State Department or from Canada saying there'll be no holds barred. This investigation will be thorough. This reminds me of the Warren Commission, the most complete investigation that it was ever done on any particular murder. And they cited that it won't have loopholes like Air Florida. Well, when I did research and broadcast on Air Florida, this was supposed to be completely final and no problem, ice on the wing and so forth. And later it can turn out to be an investigative mess, and they admit that they didn't really go into it. The flight recorder is made for the purpose of telling you what happened. With the case of Air India, it showed that there was a bomb, or the parts of the plane showed an air bomb, blew that up, put on the airplane when it left on its way over to London and then to India. But the crash investigators here are having a hard time, and after 3 to 4 days, they say there's no certainty. There's also a passenger list they can't come up with. There's several people that are missing. It seems to me as they get on the plane, just as any airplane, you have the names of the people assigned, those that left the peacekeeping force. There were a certain amount there. They must know who's there and who's not. And there's a discrepancy of names. And then they said they'll do an autopsy, that Canada wants an autopsy. They have to, because they want to see if the pilot was under stress. Well, pardon me, but I just can't believe when all these bodies are shattered and blown to bits and buried under snow and so forth, that how in the world they expect you to believe that they're going to find stress in a pilot, that he had a hard time and that's why the plane dropped. I just don't believe all that, and that's why I believe that instead of making yourself physically sick in responding to these events that I ran down, what are the pathological ways to avoid it, meet it head on and just question. One headline, tape offers little help in plane mystery, flight recorder damage hindered. Another one, the crash investigators are having a hard time, and they have trouble with the discrepancies of the amount of people. First, it was a gasoline. No, it wasn't the gasoline. Then it was overloaded. No, it wasn't overloaded. They can't come up with an answer. I think I know the 4 to 5 reasons why it was sabotaged. I won't run them down now, but I know that it was. And so the investigation will go on, but they do use the word sabotage, but then they'll say we won't know who or how or why. Another long article, and I mean there are long articles now that would take hours to outline. One in the New York Times, November the 26th, Terror, Americans as Targets, How to Combat Terrorism. And it tells about the Delta Force. It's very much in question because of their extra mishandling of money. And it's an article about how America is being besieged and attacked in 72 countries since 1968. And American citizens are the target of 35% of all terrorist activities. Well, you have to go back again to the charter of the CIA and what we've done and the example we've set. And two reasons for terror are taking place. One is a genuine anger at us for things that we have done all over the world, for our coups, for our overthrowing countries, for the murder of political leaders, whether it's Allende or it's Lumumba in the Congo or Trujillo in the Dominican Republic. You begin to add it up. In Mr. Diem in Vietnam, there are many books and studies adding up the way we're killing people and how we're getting away with it and also the way we work. And I believe one half of the terrorism against the United States is an anger and frustration at us, and the other half is the organized sabotage and terror done by the agencies identical to the Reichstag fire or the beginning of World War II, where Hitler dressed up particular criminals that were in jail, put them in prison, into uniforms that looked like Polish soldiers, and then shot them all to say that Germany was attacked by Poland. A good hunk of the reason Americans are targets, as I say, is that we want control of the world, and if we look like we're under siege, we will respond with more weapons, more arms. That's why I cited the billions of dollars they want to put into embassies and protect us, whereas it's an excuse to get into that country and spy against the country and say, why are you against us? The actual terrorism that takes place many times is to take control of us, and it is very effective because we respond with more arms and more weapons. Now, there's a story in the Washington Times by John Reese, an article, Why Have Conservative Voices Joined in CIA Bashing? They're hitting William Casey. He never should have been director of the CIA. He was in the OSS, worked with the top Nazis. He's a Knight of Malta. He has no discretion on lying. Works with drug dealers like Robert Vesco and the international drug dealers down in Bolivia that were entertained at the Republican Convention. He has no delineation of murderers, of assassins, of repressions. And all of a sudden, John Reese of Western Gold, counterintelligence, an agent provocateur himself, is saying, why are people voicing against Casey? Well, even the conservatives know the country's going down the drain, and they're speaking up because everything is going top-heavy crazy, and Casey should be out. He's made a zillion errors in the past 5 years, but his hold is the blackmail on the president, and now as head of Capital Cities, they've taken over ABC News, one of the major networks. He has unlimited power to do anything he wants, and so that even though the conservatives cry about him, the only way you're going to get rid of Casey is to get rid of this president, and right behind him is CIA Director George Bush. So while the CIA is being kicked around and bandied about, remember that the man in line after your president is the director of the CIA. A story in the Washington Times, relations grow ugly in the marriage of CIA and Congress. And I use the word marriage of Reinhard Galen to forming our intelligence community with Alan Dulles in my first published article, Why Was Martha and Mitchell Kidnapped? It went into the section of American assassinations. And I talked about America being changed because of the marriage of the Nazis to our intelligence community. And now you're seeing the harvest and the children of that particular activity. And the screwing was on us, all of us around the world. They didn't just produce children. We've all been raped by the combination of these intelligence groups that became legal in December of 47 to do anything they want. And now the native population is catching on a little. The newspaper San Jose Mercury has a story, you know, this past November, several weeks ago, CIA Intelligence Committee spat bills. And this is about how Casey detests congressional oversight committees. Casey is supposed to have carte blanche. He doesn't want Congress telling him what to do. It interferes with his worldwide policy of raping and killing the world. So Casey's objecting. Another story, Casey's policy-setting role panel likely to be reduced, is a proposal that would dilute CIA director's White House influence and broaden the powers of Mr. McFarlane. Now, that was in the New York Times, November the 14th. By December the 2nd, McFarlane was out, and Casey stayed strong. The CIA, which has those powers from the National Security Council, and when I say CIA, I mean collectively the DIA, Navy Intelligence, Army Intelligence, the whole gang, the Defense Industry Security Command Force, DISC, Division 5 of the FBI. They are part and parcel of running this country. So if they thought that the CIA would be reduced in power, that Casey's setting the policy, it didn't happen, it won't happen. Casey knows too much, and as I say, between his being knighted by the Vatican, running their warfare department for the CIA and with all of his dirty tricks, he will continue in power until the CIA director is president of the United States, the former CIA director. Another large article, there were a series of these. The main one, November the 5th, Soviet says defector was kidnapped. And he described being drugged and he described being kidnapped, Mr. Yurchenko. Well, that's exactly what we do. They offered him $1 million down payment, $62,500 a year with inflation adjustment. We'd pay any amount for these people to come here, and they're going back and they're telling other countries what happened, and Mr. Yurchenko is describing the condition that he was in when he was brought here. And interestingly enough, he walked away from a restaurant and disappeared and went to the Soviet embassy. But Casey has done any amount of activity, spent any amount of money to get these kind of people to say Russia is bad. And do you know what? They're reading our papers, and they know we have problems here, like Mr. Gorbachev told the president. And everything isn't black and white anymore, and it's never going to be again. Now, going on to the story of Azhar and the influence to make him say the KGB were responding and planning the murder of the Pope, I just want to update one article I had on the air last week, and this was December 4th in the New York Times. And that's how a racketeer, I mentioned him before, Mr. Giovanni Pandico, was testifying that he met with the head of Italian intelligence community and with the mafia, the organized crime, and they coached Mr. Azhar to say the things they did, and they showered him with gifts, and Reverend Mariano Santini befriended him. They fixed his cell that was very sparse with clothing and furniture to make him very comfortable, and a member of the Naples gang, Mr. Piceno, was put in the cell with him, and they threatened these people with death if they didn't say that the Bulgarians and the KGB wanted to kill the Pope, and they, as I say, they decorated his cell. And Mr. Pandico was testifying, and Azhar was yelling, "It's a plot against me. He's a slanderer." And Azhar is taking it personally, because if he can't hold that story that the KGB did it, then he's totally worthless to all the testimony, and he becomes a non-person like Mr. Deke, and anyone can kill Azhar. So when Pandico says, "Azhar, you were coached," he says, "It's a plot against me." He takes it personally, not seeking the truth, but against me, and he says he didn't know Pandico, and Pandico yells back, "You know very well we met with Mr. Musumeci, and you even called me friends. We were friends." And he said to him, "You are an exported slanderer." And he was exported by Paul Hensley and the CIA, the Turkish group, and Claire Sterling and Michael Ledeen. And I want to get into them a lot more in just a little while. So this activity is going on there, and Azhar is taking it seriously. And one of the witnesses who coached him said that he would be killed. They had to go along and work and coach him and give him the goodies. And that trial is a total example of the Central Intelligence Agency and Mr. Casey falling apart. Now, after the Pope was shot, and for a few months, maybe 12 months, people wondered, why doesn't the CIA investigate this? Casey couldn't investigate because it was his own people, and they shot the Pope, as bad as he is, to create the bad Bulgarian-Russian mindset. And there isn't an intelligent person in Europe. In this country, there's intelligent people who can't get the information. In Europe, there's hardly an intelligent person that can't be following that trial every day and the course it's taking. And even a conservative may say to Casey, "Get out." And John Reese is wondering why the conservatives are on his case. Now, in New York City, there's that trial going on of the mafia. And I've mentioned before the very important witness, Mr. Tommaso Buscetta, the connecting link to the Brazilian, Syrian, Naples, Palermo, the whole drug connections. And Buscetta gets on the stand, and he's earning his keep. Remember the G. Robert Blakey, who blamed the mafia for the Kennedy assassination and covered up the international connections, is behind a lot of this trial, this main trial going on in New York. The New York Times has this story. A major mafia informer, Tommaso Buscetta, testified that he knew of no drug dealing by the mafia or the main defendant in the pizza connection. He knew of no drug dealing. And he's talking about Gaetano Badalamenti, a fellow I've mentioned the last few weeks on the air. But all they're doing is putting millions of dollars into E.F. Hutton's account and millions of dollars into the Merrill Lynch of Mr. Reagan, the now head of the White House staff. Where are these millions coming from? Boy, they must eat a lot of pizza in New York. There must be nothing but pizza in New York. And Badalamenti, you see, is diverting, just as G. Robert Blakey diverted from the Kennedy assassination, the international Nazi network, the real terror network, from the entire investigation. They're diverting the drug, and they're trying to say that they're absolutely, he doesn't know of any drug connections. Now, for that alone, he would certainly get an A+ and be considered a very good prosecution witness, because even though the trial's going on and they refer to the mafia, that he says he doesn't know of it. Now, the prosecution said Badalamenti supplied heroin for an international ring that used the network of pizza restaurants to disguise the drug operation, but Busetti wanted to show that the mafia had resources that ran their own operation, and Busetti said he didn't know about the drug connections. He knew Badalamenti for 35 years in the Sicilian mafia, La Cosa Nostra, and that he was an excellent leader. He described him as an excellent leader of the Cosa Nostra. But can you imagine saying on the stand that he wasn't familiar that this particular person, to his knowledge, ever participated in narcotics traffic? I mean, can you separate those lies from the actual facts of what is the trial about? Is it just about stealing cars or something? And then there was a story in the San Francisco Examiner this past month on the life and sudden death of the Sicilia Mafia clan. Now, what are they killing each other off? It certainly just isn't for cheese for pizza. You can't believe that. And this one article says, last week, the magistrates indicted 475 people for more than 90 killings. They were indicted this was the second week in November. And within 3 years, there are more than 500 people killed, and at least as many disappeared without a trace and are presumed dead. That's 1,000 people. And the mafia out of Italy, working with the Cosa Nostra, this Badalamenti. This doesn't involve drugs, you understand. This just involves mozzarella cheese. And Mr. Busata, Tommaso Busata, is doing exactly what he should do, because if there's no drugs, then there's no Joseph Mengele or Martin Bormann or Klaus Barbie drug connections, and no San Paolo, Brazil, Syrian, Palermo drug connections. He has to get on the stand and say that. Not that it's such a big headline story, but it looks pretty good there. And, of course, the trial is going on as to the stealing of cars, and Mr. Gambino's crime group is being investigated. Lots of stories from the New York Times, not syndicated around the country. The Colombo witness testifies about bribe attempt, and they're telling about extortion cases in Brooklyn and trying to locate government witnesses who would then be murdered and so forth, how they're wiping out witnesses. Well, they're witnesses to what? They're witnesses to organized crime, extortion, and drug. Of course, drug money is the big money, and that's what they're talking about. They're also describing destruction of evidence in this and other cases to hide the real activities, which are the drug profits that are circulating around. Now, I can't take much time, but I just want to comment on the GE purchasing of RCA, $6 billion cash deal. These mergers are really scary. As I say, Capital Cities has come in and taken ABC. NBC is a station with Henry Kissinger as a main advisor, but the GE is the corporation that had many mergers with IG Farben. It is the company that put Ronald Reagan into the presidency by parading him around to the various offices of GE and making him, in quotes, knowledgeable about communism or anti-communism. And GE just announced that it would buy out RCA, which is NBC, and this major corporation that has been so active both during and after the war with many Nazis, Nazi war criminals, politicians, getting into prominence through not only their inventive electric ideas, but their political ideas that are so strong. We have three major outlets of news for television, and that's all people see for their news in this country, most of them, ABC, NBC, and CBS. And it won't be long before CBS News will be taken over. Ted Turner tried it. He didn't get it. Jesse Helms wanted it. But there's going to be a hunk of money coming in, a lot of money soon, and you will see the end of the major networks. And a person from Mexico bought the United Press International, and the wire services and the television will begin to focus in on very narrow areas of what they consider to be news for you, such as the whale that can't get out of the river. He's gone into the river and can't get out of the ocean. And these become big stories to be developed at the expense of some of the other things that are taking place. Now, this past week, last week, I talked about the connections of Mr. Pollard, the Israeli spy, to Israel and to their top terrorist group, Dirty Rafi, Eitan, E-Y-T-A-N. I don't have time to take this one particular story because I could do 2 or 3 weeks on this. I'll update it later. But this past week, there were articles about the relationship of George Shultz, to Kenneth Bielken. I've mentioned his name before. He is the attorney and former partner of Robert Vesco, and the two of them were in Israel trying to patch this up and cover up the entire story. And as they were working, the Jonathan J. Pollard story was getting more and more attention, and that secret terrorist group, I'm sure, is linked to the narcotics traffic around the world and the dependence of Israel, as well as depending upon the United States for weapons and money. They depend upon a good hunk of narcotics traffic to keep the economy going, even with the terrible inflation. Now, the New York Times talked about Mrs. Pollard and Henderson Pollard, other papers also, who she carried classified documents she was going to give to the People's Republic of China, and she's a lobbyist for the National Rifle Association. There were also stories linking Mr. Pollard to Mr. Bodansky, Joseph Bodansky. Bodansky is a man whose name has been in newspapers. He's a co-writer with Arnold Borchgrave and John Reese and Robert Boss. Bodansky was a cutout to Israelis, Mr. Eitan. Bodansky is a very important name in this story because of his relationship to these various heads in Israel, and also being a middleman of not only disinformation but terrorist activity that goes to Michael Ledeen and Claire Sterling and John Reese and Arnold Borchgrave. And this Bodansky's name has been in conservative movements. He's part of the Heritage Foundation. He's associated with the Reverend Moon's Times, as I say, with the Borchgrave, with John Reese. And Reese runs what is called the Mid-Atlantic Research Group, and Bodansky is part of that. And so when you get to Borchgrave and Moss and Reese and Ledeen and Israel's anti-terrorist or terrorist head, Mr. Eitan, you get a team that have been working not in the interests of the United States, but in overthrowing, particularly Reese with Western goals and his counterintelligence, overthrowing democratic institutions and replacing them with fascism. And the story of Pollard and Eitan and all of them is a very complicated web that I will be detailing for you later, but I just want to call attention to the Mid-Atlantic research of Reese. And again, here's Western goals with Edward Teller and a who's who of American intelligence, Admiral Moore, the former Joint Chief of Staff, and the Heritage Foundation. So what looks like a circle that was simply passing information to Israel is actually a nest of people that are operational in one way or another, affecting changes. Michael Ledeen worked with Robert Keith Brown and Grenada after Maurice Bishop was murdered, and published documents that were allegedly found on the desk of Maurice Bishop. So this is a nest of Bielken, a Vesco cohort, and George Shultz, closely aligned with people in the State Department who are working in the counter-terrorist covert action group that I mentioned before. And this connection of Pollard to Israel, to Lebanon, not to Lebanon, to Pakistan, and different countries around the world has more to do with subverting activities that are taking place than is surfacing at the present time, but it is a very big story. Now, the passing of papers by Ann Henderson Pollard to Red China doesn't mean that she's a leftist and wants to help Red China. Remember, George Bush, a CIA director, was ambassador to China. And just as the United States sends arms to Iran, to Khomeini, or to China, or to various countries that we're not supposed to be sending them to, we are hoping that they will have a revolution and use those arms to overthrow the existing governments. It would be hard to do that in China, but I don't believe these people are as left as the first stories are trying to indicate they are. At least some of the journals, such as Executive Intelligence Review and Liberty Law, of course, will say that they're working for the Soviet Union. Now, various people from the State Department are going to be swept into this that are linked to these people that are operational on a day-to-day level. How they happen to get caught has to do probably with somebody turning in Pollard because he's Jewish and works with the Mossad. And even though it brings in the links to John Reese and to Borchgrave, those things aren't read in very many papers, but everyone can read that an American is giving Mossad information. Now, this last week, besides the merger or the selling of RCA to GE, a West German bank, the Deutsche Bank, is buying the Flick conglomerate. and there have been quite a few articles about that. The Flick Group have been under investigation for illegally funding various politicians, just as our CIA can assist certain people like Richard Nixon or Ronald Reagan or George Bush becoming presidents or congressmen being paid off. There's a huge amount of funding from the Flick organization, and a hunk of the Flick organization is controlled by J. Peter Grace. And just in addition to the Deutsche Bank buying Flick, J. Peter Grace is going to hold, he has a 26% stake in the Flick Group that he wants to buy so that the Deutsche Bank doesn't own it. Now, the Deutsche Bank, run by Hermann Abst, who, as I said, is now advisor to the Vatican with their finances, was the bank that wrote the paychecks for Himmler and Hitler and the Gestapo. And you may say, well, that was a long time ago. But the Deutsche Bank is buying the huge Flick Group. They're going to purchase it. And J. Peter Grace of W.R. Grace & Company wants to hold his share of Flick. It'd be interesting to see Grace having a share of what becomes the Deutsche Bank, because J. Peter Grace has always worked with that organization and is very comfortable with it. But he wants to hold on to his share that the Deutsche Bank doesn't own. I don't know how you divide Flick or separate it, but here we have J. Peter Grace, who's had a long association with Nazis, past and present, the Grace Company, past and present, and all of a sudden, in the midst of controversy in Germany, the Flick Group is bought out by the Deutsche Bank, which has an important relationship to Mr. Grace, to Roger Milliken, again to Western Gold. They put up the money for John Reese for Western Gold. And there's an interesting tie-in of American fascism computers into police departments, payoff of politicians, something that's been going on since, well, since the end of World War I, but noticeably just right now, these names are merging and converging, where we've been talking about them as separate entities for a long time, knowing they're not separate, but all of a sudden these mergers are gobbling up and putting these two groups, the kinds, together, just as General Motors bought used aircraft. And I haven't had a chance to go into the role of used by being bought by General Motors. Motors was one of the biggest, General Motors' biggest funders of Adolf Hitler. And after the war, the aerospace scientists and the paperclip scientists developed the Hughes aircraft, and I accused the Hughes organization as being an umbrella group for fascism, and all of a sudden the Hughes empire is part of and gobbled up by General Motors. So GE is gobbling NBC and the Hughes aircraft by General Motors, and now the Deutsche Bank is taking the Flick Company, and there are tremendous cataclysmic changes taking place around the world. When I say that GE is taking over NBC, I also know they're taking RCA, which is our communication systems, weapon systems. It is a tremendous merger. But when you take NBC, you take the way we see or hear the world, the amount of information that's given to us, the amount of truth or lies. They may already know what's down these airplanes or the details of these hijackings, but we are lied to. And when these major corporations take over, that kind of information that we're getting, which is already clouded, for the purposes of preparing weapons and contracts for another world, how will we ever be able to survive all the disinformation and the onslaught that is involved in the merger of these major companies and banks? Now, next week I want to go into some local things too, and some political things that are affected by all this violence, and just run these down for you, because there is so much coming out in the news. The San Jose Mercury has a story about the police chief in San Jose, California, training possible death squads in San Jose. The Congress has repealed a law made in 1974 about training foreign police and intelligence. And so right here in our own backyard in San Jose, California, according to waiving Section 660 of Congress, we can train those police in El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, Costa Rica, Panama, you name it, for torture, killing, and overthrowing of governments to the liking of the corporate greed in the United States. Time is out now, but I only have about 100 other things to talk about today, but you know how that hour flies. It does for me. I hope it does for you. We'll just continue along this line with a few different kinds of stories next week, but related to the same thesis of this galloping fascism and how it's closing in on us. In the meantime, This is Mae Brussel, and keep active and happy during these holidays by keeping well and finding a lot of happiness in sharing these things, memories, the good memories and the good times with your friends and family.